I'm Sunny Yusech Kuhn of the North Carolina Reading Service. Welcome to another edition of Community Connections. Every month, we will introduce you to people in the community who are making a difference. My guest today is John Luckett. Welcome, John. We are delighted that you can join us to provide and share information about you and your position at Raleigh Rescue Mission. Let me introduce John. John is the president and CEO of Raleigh Rescue Mission, bringing over 30 years of executive leadership experience in nonprofit and service industries. Prior to joining Raleigh Rescue Mission, John was the CEO of the Good Samaritan Health Center in Atlanta, Georgia. While expanding the health center services to an increasing number of individuals experiencing homelessness, John and his wife, Cynthia, felt they were being called to work exclusively with the homeless population. John states, "As I look back on my life, I believe God prepared me for my role at the Raleigh Rescue Mission, beginning with my childhood." John grew up in poverty in rural Mississippi during the 1960s. After graduating from the University of Memphis, John moved to Atlanta and started his career in banking. His desire to help young people grow and develop in a work setting led him to Chick-fil-A and Wendy's as a franchise operator. As a result of taking care of his aging parents, John started a new career as an executive with national and regional senior living companies. While the for-profit roles were rewarding, John believed God wanted him to use his gifts and experiences to assist underprivileged individuals to become successful. John and Cynthia have two adult daughters. Outside of his dedication to the Raleigh Rescue Mission as president and CEO, he enjoys running, hiking, golfing, volunteering at church, and through other organizations who assist underprivileged people. His personal philosophy is to glorify Jesus with actions and words and invest his life in others so they can live a purposeful life. Some of John's favorite music includes the genres of jazz, country, and Christian. John has served as CEO of Raleigh Rescue Mission since May 2017. He volunteers on a variety of boards, including St. David's School, Habitat for Humanity, and Mission Triangle. Let's start chatting with John, who brings a type of rags-to-enrichment story for our listeners. Welcome to Community Connections, John.
Hi, Sonia. I'm glad to be here. So excited that I can be with you guys today.
We're happy to have you. So, John, let's explore a little about your childhood, the poverty you mentioned, and how it has impacted your life.
Yes, I grew up in a little small town in Mississippi, Carthage, Mississippi. The claim to fame that town is it was close to Philadelphia, Mississippi, which is where the three Freedom Riders were killed. And so that created a lot of unrest, as you can imagine, in that part of the country. And so out of that social unrest and all the negative things, there were people that came in the midst that stood in the gap for me and my family, gave my dad a job, kept our house from being burned down, all those different things. So when I look back on that, that was a pivotal area in my life.
I see. Well, that got you thinking.
Yes.
Okay. Thinking is very important.
Yes.
Okay. So you grew up there. And when did you leave?
So I grew up in a segregated school environment. And so then in the 70s, schools were integrated. That was a big shift, too. And so because of the kindness of people in that neighborhood, I was able to do the proper schooling to go to college. So I left and went to college in 77 and University of Memphis. And then from there, after college, I graduated and moved to Atlanta. And that's where I started my banking career.
Okay. That sounds, you know, step by step.
Yeah, I know. It's amazing when you look back to see how these things fit together.
Okay. So now let's talk a little bit about the Raleigh Rescue Mission. It appears to take a T-chart approach. That is to say, a line drawn down a blank page listing in one column the problem, mm-hmm. and on the opposite column the solution.
Mm-hmm.
So speak to us about the problems in communities who Raleigh Rescue Mission focuses on, and in general, and then specifically the homeless.
Yes. Well, I would say you're so correct. The problem is somewhat a hidden problem, and I'll start with that. The hidden problem is most people don't realize that the majority of people in Wake County are children that are homeless. There's over 4,000 children homeless, and this is according to the Wake County School District. And each one of those children has a guardian. So we estimate there's about anywhere between 1,000 to 1,500 guardians for these 4,000 kids. So now you're up to close to 5,500 to 6,000 people just on what I call the hidden homeless or the situational homeless part of the equation. So when we look at this, this is actually all over the country. Most people see homelessness from the chronic view, which is those that we see is on the street asking for money or someone downtown. But that's just the tip of the iceberg. Some people estimate it's only about 20 to 30%. The vast majority of people are women and the children and other men also and single women in there, but they're situational homeless. And so that's on one side of the equation. So people come to us because we offer what we call the new life plan, a restart. How can you get a do-over? You know, it's kind of hard in life to get a do-over if you don't have money or support system. So we consider ourselves a do-over. So we have a six-phase approach where individuals can start out with us. They live on site. Environment is critical, as we all know. And when they live on site, we're able to invest in them. They get free food, clothing, you know, whatever medical services or anything that they may need. We provide all that so they can restart again. Then we invest in them for a job, a car, and also housing.
Tell me about on site. What do you mean when you say on site?
It's a residential program, so they live in our building. Downtown. So we have enough space for about 100 people. We serve both women and children, and we serve single men and single women in that facility.
How long has the Raleigh Rescue Mission been doing this?
It'll be 61 years in November.
Oh,
and we've been on that exact location. Now, we started out this big. It was a four-bedroom house 61 years ago. But, yeah, we've been doing these services for quite a long time. I've been there 5 years, but, yeah, we've been doing quite a long time.
Oh, that's amazing. And you say it's a house?
So it's a commercial building. I mean, it's set up like a apartment-style setting, more like an old-fashioned dorm room at NC State. You know, we got floors and common showers and things like that for separate men, obviously, on one floor, and women and children on another floor. So.
And how long can a family of a single mother and child live?
It ranges at different times, but anywhere between 4 to 8 months based on what their situation is. The key thing is getting them a job, a living wage job. We really want to make sure that they can sustain that, and then they get the car while they're still living there before they move out into the apartment. And then we also have some outside apartments that we lease on their behalf where they can move off. They need a little bit more time in order to get ready to be independent. So we have a lot of great for-profit used car dealerships that work with us, and we're very excited about that. I'll tell you, the community here in Raleigh is very giving. The for-profit community is very giving and very helpful in that process. So we use that network for jobs, for cars, and for apartments.
That's fabulous.
Yeah.
It must take a lot of work to get all of that organized.
Well, it takes a lot of work, but, you know, when you have willing people, we've been around a long time, and really it's about asking, right? Sometimes you have not because you ask not. So,
so are you allowed to say on the air which car dealerships have contributed?
Well, I can tell you what some of them are right now. Fred Anderson, that automotive group. We have another group called Frontline. That's another group that we have. So that's a couple of them. We have several more, but those are the top ones that we use. Yeah.
Well, thank you to them.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's really wonderful. How do you differ from Interact?
So we deal with women, children, single women, and also single men. So we have comprehensive for everyone there. Well, they're one of our partners. So we go back and forth. Sometimes a person is a better fit for their environment, and sometimes they're a better fit for our environment. But we're partners.
Okay, so, yeah. Partnerships are always good.
Yeah.
Okay, so you have this great program. What are some of the challenges that you're faced with?
So I listed all those great things we do. The challenge is always finding the right fit for a job, for an individual, and then obviously cars, and then housing we know is a big challenge, because right now most of the housing that's affordable is going to be farther away from the downtown center area. So we're looking at some of the outlying communities and in different counties. So transportation is important. So I would say the challenge is always finding that job, because most of the clients that come to us have to change careers because they were not successful in the careers they had before, or they had other issues. And we do deal with individuals who are formerly incarcerated, so they're starting over again. So it's always a challenge. The first job is always the hardest job when you're starting over in life.
So have these people become homeless because of illness, because they've been high on the ladder, and then they've fallen because of the change of the environment of our world with technology, and maybe they couldn't keep up?
Well, all of the above. I've had former Raleigh Police Department officers who got hooked accidentally on painkillers and things like that because they hurt themselves, and they caused them to lose a job, and that went down a dark road, and they've come back to our program. I've had the majority of the women come there through the domestic violence, so they're fleeing that. Medical issues, as you just talked about, if you have medical insurance and then you get sick, and then you out, you lose your job, and it's just a spiral that goes down. And technology, as you know, is critical. Most companies, manufacturers, I don't care who it is going to technology. And if individuals get left behind and there's no one to teach them and coach them, they get behind. So it's a combination of all those. And then I tell people, when you're depressed and you got all these things going wrong, it's easy to get addicted to drug and alcohol, because that's what a lot of people turn to.
Yes.
Not everyone that comes to us are addicted to that, but a good number of them, because they were so depressed about their situation, they did turn to alcohol and drugs.
Okay. One particular challenge we have all had to face over these past 2 years is COVID. How has that been handled, and with what success?
Yeah. Well, I will tell you, as we all know, COVID was a curveball, right? You may saw that coming. We'd like to know who they were, right? So it has been very difficult. We, because of the health department, we went down extremely low in the number of people we could have on site. Thanks to the city of Raleigh, they opened up hotels, and they were able to absorb a lot of the people as we figured out how to create a safe environment. But they put out good guidelines, and so we were able to put in place those guidelines. We did a lot of remote learning with people in their rooms as opposed to getting together. We had meals we prepared, and we delivered it to people's rooms. So we basically had to change everything that we were doing and go to a different model. But we were safe. We had one big outbreak during the whole two-year time period, and I guess COVID is still going on. Let's be realistic. It hadn't really stopped. But so the biggest thing that we learned, though, from this was we had to change our model and make it more technology-driven as opposed to the old-fashioned way of using, desktops. We use laptops. It could be portable so people could learn at their own pace and work at their own pace. Also, it changed the way we looked at our whole cleaning system. We changed that, our cooking system. We made everything more simplified so people could be have social distancing. We wear a mask. We still wear a mask there. We work with all the sanitation things that we need to do there. So it was a great hardship and a learning experience, right? And so we've come out stronger. We feel like that we're actually stronger now and been able to deliver our services a lot faster. And we actually, because of the speed at which we had to change, that's why these networks of getting jobs, getting people out faster on their own, was really critical to that process. And so we beefed up that whole process.
What about the vaccine?
So we have, you know, we did not force people to have vaccines, so it was on their choice, both our staff and that, and so we looked at it as a personal choice. And so we were able to work around that, and, you know, that's not something that I know personally. I mean, I have somebody assigned our HR department that keeps up with that stuff, but, you know, we respected people's privacy,
choice.
But also was to able to deliver on the services. And, you know, I would tell you, we didn't have, other than that one outbreak, we had no major issues.
That's incredible,
yeah.
Dealing with that large size of people.
Yeah.
And children.
Yes,
and
exactly.
Children. Okay, we're going
to... Yeah, we have a child development center on site, so I know you might want to ask about that, but that's one of the key part of our program.
Okay, I'm going to get to it. So, referring to your mission statement, which is, believing every individual has sacred value, we equip people to impact the world for good, through the love of Jesus Christ. Please discuss how Raleigh Rescue Mission has attacked the problems you outlined with you did this already with the new life plan.
Mm-hmm.
But talk a little bit more about when it's viewed on paper, you know, an outline, you know, that it looks good, but actual application.
Yes.
What did you run into?
So, As we look at that factor of saying that everyone is created has sacred value, we believe every person, regardless of their religious background or any other thing, is created in the image of God, and they have a purpose in life. And so our goal is not to get into the fray of what's happening in popular culture, but focus on the individual and say, what is it that you want to do, and who do you want to be? And most of our people come to us and say, hey, you know what? I really want to be back in mainstream society. I want to be successful. I just need some assistance to help me understand what my gifts and abilities are. And I also want some assistance with my child, you know, so that they can get up to speed and learning. Because a lot of times, based on where you are and who what your background is, you may not have access to tutoring and other things. And we provide that on site for the children and also the parents. So when we look at our program, the six-phase program, like you said, it's a broad overview. But we call ourselves doing customized individual focus care for individuals. So we get to know the person and try to help them on their path where they're going. Everyone there came there because, hey, I want to get back on my feet. I want to be independent. How do you do that, right?
Mm-hmm.
A little background on how we came up with this. The chairman of the board, when I came on board, said, hey, what if your son or daughter left at 18 and was gone for 10 years and then came back and said, and you heard they were doing all kind of crazy things in the world, and they came back, hey, I want to get my life together. What would you do? We would get in there and be focused on our children with all of our energy and strength because we said, you know what? We're going to help you be successful, and that's what we're doing for our clients.
Fantastic. That's wonderful. I want to talk a little bit more about the children.
Okay.
What's the most difficult thing for the children to overcome in relation to self-image and confidence as they face their world in a homeless state? What does that do to the child?
Well, it's very traumatic, okay? I will tell you it's very traumatic. And we hire special kids. We have special tutors and also my staff there that works with kids. And so they are dropped off separate facility. So their moms drop them off in the morning just like you do in a regular preschool. And they're trained to deal with kids who have trauma. And so they really focus in on the children, and we focus in on the mom because that's what they need is focus for that. And so we're able to overcome the ACEs that they have experienced. And also it takes the statistics of resilience says it takes one loving adult to impact a child to help them be resilient. And we've got a big staff of people that do that for more than just one of the children there. So we work with a lot of our kids in that way.
So what does the staff consist of for the children?
Okay.
I mean, do you have a psychologist on staff?
So we have access to, we don't have them on staff. Obviously, that's to be very expensive, but we do use them. They come in. We have partnerships where individuals can come in and coach the children. But most of our teachers are trained in trauma care, trauma-informed care. So it's the consistency of actually being there every day, have the same staff and working with those children. And basically, it sounds kind of as a cliche word, but demonstrating love and consistency is a huge thing that a lot of our kids haven't had. They've moved around a lot, and they've seen a lot of domestic violence and things going on. So just to change that environment is huge. And our kids have overachieved actually during COVID. You know, many of the kids were all over the place where they stayed put. They were there, and we were able to continually teach them online. And that was actually our kids tested better once they started back testing than some of the kids had been out. So it's amazing.
It is amazing. And the teachers you refer to, are they teachers who don't work in public school anymore and have come to work at your facility?
We have a combination of those. Most of them, because the majority of our kids that come there are preschool. So we have kids who have come from very prominent child care facilities here that charge a whole lot of money, and they decided their calling was to come work with these kids. And I can't pay them what they would be making at these private places. We try to get close, but yeah, we're not there. But they have a calling to really see these kids succeed. And so they've chosen to come there, and they invest a lot of time. And we have a smaller group now. We don't have large classrooms, and that's another thing. We can get more individualized attention by having smaller classrooms of children. And I think that's a key to our success also. But, yes, we have access to counselors and other individuals we bring in to help us with the children.
What is the age range of the children? You said, you know,
so
you
we go preschool.
Young,
yeah.
Preschool.
Birth to 5 years old is in the preschool. And then we can take anyone on the school age side from, you know, first grade up to 12th grade. And so we have a wide range. Majority of the children that come there, though, are between the ages of birth and 12 years old. Very, very few teenagers would follow their parents to move in there at the Rotter Rescue Mission.
What happens to those who don't follow them there?
Sometimes they go and live with other family members. You know, that's an option they have. And then there's another partnership that we have of an organization that works primarily with children that are homeless. And so that's all teenage environment. From I think they're about 13 till about 21 or 20, somewhere around there.
So say on a Tuesday, regular day,
uh-huh,
you have a new client, a new family client.
Yes, uh-huh.
You have the mom.
Yes.
She's distressed.
Mm-hmm.
She doesn't have a job, and she's not doing well with her husband.
Mm-hmm.
So she either left him because of domestic violence,
mm-hmm,
and she's got this 4-year-old, let's
okay
say.
Mm-hmm.
What happens the first day when they come?
So typically, their first encounter with us is an assessment, and then we basically move them in, as you would have somebody that move into your house. Think about bringing someone into your home and getting them all set up in their room, because they do have their own individual room. Get them all set up. We do an orientation with them. They meet everyone. Each one of our clients is assigned what we call a client success manager. And that manager works Monday through Friday with them, and they're there from 7 in the morning to about 6. You know, we have two teams of them, so they always have a point person. So we get them set up. You know, we provide 3 meals a day. We provide all the services they may need, any clothing. So it's really sort of like moving into another person's home. Where we're there. We become their new family. And that's what we try to focus on, because we believe that they're making a hard decision, and we want to make it as easy for them as possible.
We are running down in time.
Okay.
So let me ask you if you can briefly tell me one great success story. Just one.
Yes.
Just one.
Okay. Well, I've got one of a lady that moved in with 5 children under the age of 6. Exactly. That's what most people would say. Like, oh, my goodness. Domestic violence. She was fleeing domestic violence. And so we just did what we did. And we got bring in this mom. She's frustrated. She's upset. She doesn't know what to do. She's got 5 kids who are running all over the place. We bring them in, and we tag team, not just one. We have the whole team kind of surrounds her, works with her kid, and keeps telling her, hey, it's going to be okay. We got her settled down. She went through the program. She has a job, a great job right now that she loves. She has a car that she loves, and she's got, it's a van, by the way, with 5 kids, got to be. And then she has her own apartment. And so she is thriving. We stay in contact with her. We encourage her. Because our process, once you move out, we stick with you another 2 years. Many times I think the services that we hear about cut people off too soon. And I tell people, like, I have two daughters. They'll be like, okay, you graduated from college. You got a job. Don't call me.
Okay. Now, I want to combine these two questions because we're coming down in time. I'm sure you have a need for volunteers.
Yes.
So, in one sentence, what would you tell volunteers and how would you tell them to get in touch with you?
So, you can, an easy thing, you can go on our website, RotaRescue.org, or you can call me at 919-986-8112. And we will adjust our services to what your gifts are. One of the things we try to do is match things to what people love to do. And we have a lot of things you can do.
Say the website again, please.
RotaRescue.org. And my number is 919-986-8112.
Okay. And you are John?
John Luckett.
Luckett. Okay.
Yes.
So, finally, a combination of perseverance, fortitude, and passion seem to be the ingredients for successful people, which obviously you are. So talk about what the word passion means to you. And, you know, your own personal thought. You have about a minute.
Okay. All right. Well, you know, passion to me has to do with that which you dream about, can't sleep. You're thinking about it. You love it so much you would just rather do that than other things in life, and it comes to that. And I can think of this is the best job I've had ever, investing in people's lives so that they can be successful. Now, that's my personal calling. I love to see, like, the lady and their men. I could tell you many, many stories of individuals. And it's not that we're not doing it for them. We are assisting them. We're coming alongside them to help them do what they want to do. And the truth be told, everybody who's successful has had someone who assisted them to be successful.
I think the word is support.
Yes.
Well, John, you've been a fabulous guest. You open the eyes of the people who live in Wake County and all of North Carolina, because North Carolina Reading Service goes all around North Carolina and beyond. We've had people from Colorado on the air with us, okay? So we just want to thank you so much, and we hope that by being here on the air with us, people who need your services will be able to contact you. We've run out of time for this month's episode of Community Connections. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. I'm Sunny Yusach-Kuhn for the North Carolina Reading Service. Community Connections is available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments, questions, or would like to be a sponsor of Community Connections, please call 919-832-5138. That number again is 919-832-5138. Thank you for listening to North Carolina Reading Service.